This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and this is Gigi Will Play It, BFM's video game show. We're at the end of April, which means that I'll be joined by content director at kakuchopare.com, Jonathan Leo, for a summary of what's been happening in the industry. Later, we'll also give you a rundown of the games that have been released this month. Let's start with the news, and first up, Larian Studios will be developing two new games in the future, but they won't be sequels to Baldur's Gate, as the studio will not be developing any more games from the franchise. Jonathan has more.
Yes, Larian Studios is moving away from Dungeons & Dragons, the IP in general. On the topic of the future, Larian Studios confirmed that they won't be introducing any major new narrative content to the story of Baldur's Gate 3 or its origin characters and companions, and they will also not be making expansions of Baldur's Gate 3 and possibly Baldur's Gate 4 by extension, I guess. They also confirmed, as you mentioned before, they are going to be working on two new projects, and they are not related to Baldur's Gate or anything D&D. So my guess is they're probably going to go back to the original one true love, which is Divine Divinity. I mean, it's called the Divinity series, but it started with Divine Divinity. And then you've got Divinity Original Sin 1, Part 2, you've got the Dragon Commander game, and a bunch of others I totally miss. But the point is, they're going back to the well. And as far as I know, that's the only original IP that I know of, unless they're creating something really brand new. But I don't think they're going to be getting out of the wheelhouse, which is basically turn-based RPG combating and intricate storylines and meaningful narratives where, you know, every choice matters that you make up to the end, you know, where you get different outcomes.
Divinity Original Sin is a very good game, right?
Oh yes, it's a very good game. I didn't play the sequel though, but the first game was great. And I'm going to assume that people love the sequel. Although they do have this habit from the community. I mean, at least they're being told, the community, at least decided by the community, where the first version of the game is not actually the best one. You have to wait until they release the Super Edition. I forgot what the name is called, but they always release like a extended edition of it with extra stuff and totally patched version of the game. So if anything, just like the Baldur's Gate 3 experience, the first version of the game, quite buggy. But it's still great. It's still great.
Alright, okay. So what's actually going to happen to Baldur's Gate? Like, will there be a sequel? And who's going to like actually do it?
Well, funny you should mention that, because Hasbro is going to do a Baldur's Gate sequel, but without Larian Studios. To quote Hasbro in a PC Gamer interview, "We are now talking to lots of partners and being approached by a lot of partners who are embracing the challenge of what does the future of the Baldur's Gate franchise look like?" Quotation. Now, I can tell you that your future may not be looking bright, because Larian Studios are probably the only team who understands how D&D works and everything, from the lore, the story, especially the Baldur's Gate duology, and now trilogy, since they added in the third game. Yeah. But generally, they're talking to people here and there, but I just feel this is just PR speak that basically amounts to "we don't know yet." So the future is very uncertain. Baldur's Gate 4 might be a thing, but it may not have the same magic, considering that Larian Studios is getting away from it and doing their own thing. And probably the only other team that knows how to do a Baldur's Gate is the original team, BioWare. And BioWare is under EA, and it's not the same BioWare that we know. So the future is very uncertain and probably not looking good.
Well, I mean, very pessimistic of you there. But going back to Larian, why did they stop working or collaborating with Baldur's Gate? You know, I find it quite interesting, because isn't the Baldur's Gate franchise a boon to them?
It is, but I think they just want to do different things, basically. I mean, they might return in the future, but again, probably far future, where they're probably after 5 years after they're done with the original games, then they'll go back to that. Who knows? Because the future, they've been working on it for so long, since 2009. Actually, even older than that, because they have to, you know, prepare the game for early access, and then early access has been lasting for Lord knows how long. So I think they're just done with it, because I think when you are doing a good job with something and then you feel like you've done your best, you, as a creator, you just want to move on. So I think Sven Vink and his team, the large team of Larian Studios, which also has like a Malaysian studio, by the way, shout outs to them. And I think they just want to do new things. Simple as that. I mean, once you're done with one big thing, you move on to the next, right? Especially for something that you own. And obviously, Larian Studios do not own Baldur's Gate. They do not own the characters and everything. So I guess that's why they're moving out, because Hasbro owns them.
All right. Okay. So moving on to another RPG, Kingdom Come has announced a new sequel to the first game, right? Kingdom Come Deliverance. They've announced the sequel to that game.
Yep, that's correct. Warhorse Studios, who made the first game, has announced the second game. There is no release date, as far as I know. They just announced it. They showed off a bit of gameplay to the media, where you return to the backdrop of 15th century Bohemia, where you are in the shoes of Henry of Scalitz on a journey filled with revenge, betrayal, and self-discovery. And also probably very tough combat, if it's anything like the first game. So it's meant to be like a very hardcore, quote-unquote, realistic RPG, where you ride a horse, you be a knight, you fight enemies in really tough sword fights, and if you die, you probably have to reload from your last save point, which is probably an hour away or so. And yeah, bigger world, same kind of combat, and still as difficult as the last game. But we'll probably see more news and probably a demo, hopefully, as time goes by. So there's no release, no concrete release date as of yet.
Okay, moving on to our neighbors. Singapore's Gentle Bros has announced Cat Quest 3.
Yep, the action RPG with cats, dogs, and pirates is coming out on 8 August 2024. So for those who have not played the last two games, it's actually a 2D action RPG featuring loot, very simple action controls, and a very cutesy, thematic, kind of whimsical fantasy world where cats rule the entire universe and they have castles and stuff. And now you've got dogs mixed in. You've got even rats who are pirates, you know, coming in. Mm. And there are a lot of puns in this game. So this Cat Quest 3, Pirates of the Caribbean, you are a swashbuckling privateer in this 2.5D open world action RPG in the Caribbean. And you have to look for the Northern Star, a long-lost mythical treasure. So you're going to have a lot of cat, dog, and animal puns going in between your action RPG and your questing and your fetch quests and your leveling up and whatnot. So I've seen the trailer, seen the gameplay. They added a bit of like mix of not just the top, up, down, left, right kind of 2D action RPG thing going on, but also some 2D stages and some platforming from the looks of it. So those look very interesting. So I believe developers, the Gentle Bros, are, you know, mixing it up apart from the whole Caribbean and the Golden Age of Piracy theme going on.
All right. Are you looking forward to this?
Yeah. I actually did like the first game. I couldn't play the second game, though, because I just didn't have time. I think I may have asked someone else to review it. But I know the third game, I definitely want to check it out. I probably want to buy it from them via Steam day one or so. Looks promising. And, you know, if you want something like, not mindless, but more like something simple and not too complicated, but fun, I think Cat Quest 3 might be that game, if it's anything like the first game.
Okay, moving on. There's news involving Elden Ring and concerts. Yeah, mind sharing a bit more about that?
Yes, Bandai Namco released a recent trailer talking about the concert that they're going to be hosting in Singapore. Again, in our neighbor's place. The Elden Ring Symphonic Adventure Concert will be scheduled to commence on the 28th and 29th of June this year at 8 p.m. at the Esplanade Theatre in Singapore. The concert will be organized by 5-4 Live and Singapore Street Festival. And the trailer confirmed that it will feature a full symphonic and orchestra choir performance by the esteemed Metropolitan Festival Orchestra with Thanapol Seta Brahmana, sorry if I pronounced that wrong, to conduct the concert.
Okay, so will you be going to this?
We'll see how it goes. I might want to buy a ticket and see where it goes from there. I do love the soundtrack, definitely. It's like, you remember the main theme of Elden Ring, which also plays when you fight the final boss, and then you got that very alien-like kind of gentle music that plays when you're fighting the second form of the final boss. And then you've got all the stuff in between, like the lands between... No, sorry, that's Dark Souls. Sorry. I forgot what the entire place is called, but generally, or Limgrave, the Academy, when you're fighting some of the bosses, they have unique music. And even the world, the ice places and whatnot, the different landscapes, and even the underground areas. Like, I love the music for this game. It's very haunting, to say the least. Very, as unique as its counterparts, like Dark Souls and Bloodborne. Like, it's its own flavor and its own universe. It's just very dangerously melancholic, if that's even a proper word to describe it. Ethereal. I think ethereal is a better word. Yeah,
ethereal. Yeah, ethereal sounds like the right word. And yeah, it'll be fun to see the music being played in an orchestra, right? In person?
Yep,
yeah,
that's correct. Especially the boss themes, of course. Like when you fight Godric, when you fight Melania, and of course the final few bosses near the tail end of the game.
Okay, all right. Up next, Keanu Reeves will be joining the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise. And he'll be playing Shadow the Hedgehog?
Yeah. Yes, he will be. This news actually caught me by surprise. This is like a report from the Hollywood Reporter. It hasn't been confirmed by Sega or Paramount, the distributors, yet. But it seems to be true, knowing how close to source the Hollywood Reporter is. So I believe Shadow the Hedgehog, for those who don't know, is a creation by, I believe, Eggman's grandfather or something. I'm not sure about the lore so much, but he made his first appearance in Sonic Adventure 2 and has become a fan favorite, even going so far as to star in his own game called Shadow the Hedgehog, where he skates around in his shoes and has a handgun for some reason. And yeah, he is always the rival to Sonic in the never-ending battle, like evil guy, bad guy, rival, taking the Chaos Emerald stuff, like... He's basically what to Sonic is to what Vegeta is to Goku, basically, if you want your Dragon Ball references.
Okay.
And of course, in additional news, Jim Carrey is reprising his role as Dr. Robotnik. I mean, he has to, considering that he's probably one of the highlights in the previous films. And yeah, I believe other characters like the original voice over for Tails will be coming back. Ben Schwartz will be coming back as Sonic, of course. And Knuckles is played by Idris Elba. And a couple of James Marsden might be coming back too, for all you know. He was a human character, Tom the Cop or something.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be big, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see as well, considering that I think he also played Johnny Silverhand in Cyberpunk, right? So
yes,
I wonder
yes.
how
so
it's going to sound like. Yeah.
So it's not his first video game role, but it probably won't be his last. So, I mean, he has actually voiced a bunch of cartoons too. I believe he voiced one of the characters in Toy Story 4, and of course, we know him as John Wick, you know, his comeback thing in all four movies.
Okay, yeah. Up next, we have news involving Star Wars Outlaws. Do we have a release date now? It's going to be out in August, right?
We do have a release date, that's correct. Star Wars Outlaws will launch August 30th for Xbox, PC, and PlayStation 5. Maybe for Nintendo Switch, who knows? we'll have to wait till Nintendo says something. So gamers who have subscribed to Ubisoft Plus or purchased the Go edition of the game will have 3 days early access, and those who pre-order before August 30th will receive the Kessel Runner bonus pack, which includes cosmetics for Kay Speeder and her ship, the Trailblazer. So there's actually a bit more story being revealed in the trailer, where you play the cunning scoundrel Kay Vess as she has to take down all the mob bosses in the Star Wars universe of that particular era. As to where it takes place in the films, I'm not too sure. I'm guessing between 4 and 5, or maybe 4 and 3. I'm not so sure yet, but there is Jabba the Hutt, so I'm going to guess 4, maybe around 4 or 3. But it looks very interesting, because I would like to play a bounty hunter just like what I did in Dark Forces, where I played as Cal Katarn. So who knows? I mean, Ubisoft, we may give them a lot of flack, especially for Skull and Bones. But when they do open world games, especially the action-packed ones like Far Cry 3 and 4, they do it really well until they, you know, mine the idea well dry. So having a new IP like Star Wars and having a company like Massive making a Star Wars game with hopefully as packed the galaxy with the flying and the shooting and the combat and the heisting, because you are going to be pulling off robberies and heists as K. So it'll be pretty cool to see how that turns out, especially in the Star Wars kind of context.
How's the game looking like so far? And do you think that it has a chance to blow up?
I hope blow up isn't a good thing, because I would like this game to succeed. I do like myself some Star Wars, especially if it's a new kind of like shooting or gameplay thing where I don't play as a Jedi, because I already got my fill of that in Jedi Knight 2 and 1 and 2 and the Academy. So I guess I just miss playing as a bounty hunter or someone who actually has like a handgun or someone who is basically has to use his wits and agility to get around the Imperials and Jedis or Siths or whatnot. So I would like to play those kind of characters in the Star Wars universe. So yeah. I hope this game turns out well. And with the pedigree that Massive Games has, I think this can work out pretty all right. Unless Ubisoft does something to screw them over, lah. Which usually happens, like, maybe close by when it comes to release. You know, like, microtransaction nonsense. So hopefully it doesn't come to that.
Yeah, let's hope that's not going to happen this time around. Okay. Up next, we have numbers for the recently released Dragon's Dogma 2. And what are the numbers?
Dragon's Dogma 2. I believe the numbers, according to Capcom, the game has sold over 2.5 million copies worldwide since its launch on March 22nd. This was done during the investor relations on the 2nd of April. The company has disclosed that the cumulative sales of the series as a whole has surpassed 10 million units, which is nice, considering the controversy the Dragon's Dogma 2 has faced, given its microtransactions and its terrible PC port performance.
This franchise is relatively big, right? To be fair?
It's more like a niche. I won't say niche, but there's a little secret to Dragon's Dogma where basically people who want to... It's basically Capcom's way of tricking people to play Monster Hunter, because Dragon's Dogma has Monster Hunter-like mechanics where you climb, you fight monsters for prolonged bouts of time, and then you have to chase them down when they run away. So I believe it was like the precursor to market all the Monster Hunter games from World to the one on Nintendo Switch. So Dragon's Dogma 2, I mean, it still achieved remarkable success considering that the PC version has reached a peak of 228,000 concurrent players since launch. So that's not bad considering it's a single player game.
I think that's pretty decent, right? To be fair, they did well.
I'm personally not a fan of part 2 because I do feel that there's a lot of deja vu going on, especially since if you played Dark Arisen recently. But it's still a solid game. I just wish it wasn't that expensive. I believe this is like Capcom's first foray in like the RM300 game domain, I believe. Like an extra 100 for a PC game, which is pretty insane, but understandable in a way, I guess. Honestly, I'm not so sure. But again, good job, Capcom. At least you're getting a lot of people playing this underrated franchise.
All right. Last but not least, Amazon's Fallout TV show has been renewed for season 2.
Yeah, and I believe this season 2 news, as well as the reception of the actual series, 8 episodes, really good stuff, has actually made a profound impact on the Fallout games as a whole, where I believe Fallout 76 has hit, a million players, I believe. Yeah.
Wait, Fallout 76?
Yeah, Fallout 76 has hit million players 6 years after the game first released, and I believe it actually went up because of the TV show, the interest and everything. And the fact that the game actually had a lot of updates since it's a disastrous launch, so I guess it's a stable game right now with actual people playing it.
And the game is pretty decent now?
I'm not too sure. It's definitely better than when it was launched, so definitely better. As a series whole, the Fallout series itself, Bethesda has announced that the game has welcomed 5 million players in a single day due to, of course, the show's reception. And so that's basically 1 million from Fallout 76, and the other 4 is most likely from Fallout 4 and Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah, because I was just thinking that, you know, I don't know whether Fallout 76, maybe the game is better now, but I would assume Fallout 4 or even New Vegas would be the one that fans should, I guess, go and check out.
Oh, yes,
first,
definitely.
Right?
Yeah. Fallout 4 because of the gameplay. Fallout New Vegas because of the storyline and the choices you make and everything. And the mods as well. The mods do make the game better. And also the downloadable expansions, everything. I don't think it's going to be pretty hard for people to go back to part 1, part 2, and part 3 when there's already New Vegas and there's part 4 available. And also cheap too.
Yeah, and to be fair, 76 is the latest Fallout, right? So yeah, there's that as well.
Yeah, yeah. I guess if you want to try out a multiplayer Fallout that starts at the origins of, you know, the Fallout games, you might want to try out Fallout 76.
That was Jonathan Liu, KKP's content director, summarizing the news from the industry this month. We're going for a short break. Coming up next, brief reviews of releases from April, including Stellar Blade and Children of the Sun. Stay tuned. This is GG Well Played on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to GG Well Played. I'm Hanif Baharuddin. As always, Jonathan Liu, content director at kakuchopore.com, joins me at the end of the month for our run-up. Let's review some games, starting with Luna Lander Beyond.
I am detecting a massive electromagnetic surge, but its source is unclear.
So this is a 2D sci-fi space sim that is a remake of the original Luna Lander for Atari. So you guide a roster of colorful pilots, eclectic advisors, and state-of-the-art landers through a taxing series of missions where you basically fly around in a lander in 2D. You gotta use propulsion to get around and, you know, make sure you don't crash into things, deliver cargo, retrieve resources, and rescue stranded pilots as you navigate the entire giant map full of moons and planets. My reviewer, Alif, I believe he gave it a pretty decent rating. So if you're into a very arcadey kind of action game with a sci-fi twist to it, especially if it's 2D, I think you might want to go for that. It's quite a challenge, though.
Challenge in terms of its difficulty?
Quite. Piloting the lunar lander itself. You gotta jettison yourself and everything. The controls can be a bit... How do you say? It's like a, you either love it or hate it kind of controls.
Yeah, but it's not that expensive. So I guess it's worth a shot for someone who's looking for something different, right?
Something quick. And I believe you can finish this game in about like 3 hours or so.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. From that, we move on to an action RPG called Sandland.
Why did the world have to end up like this? Someone has to do something.
Oh, yes. Action. It's an action role-playing game with open-world elements, and it's based on the Akira Toriyama manga/anime of the same name. You control Beelzebub, who pilots a tank, and together with a demon named Thief and a human sheriff named Raul, they quest together to find the legendary spring to solve the drought problems of Sandland. So the game itself is open world. You get customization for your tanks and whatnot, level up. It's got 30 to 40 hours of gameplay, and based on the hour I've played so far, it is pretty fun. Although it takes quite a while to get around, especially when they start introducing new mechanics that makes the game a lot more fun. And the graphics itself, like, they've got different areas of deserts that looks different and distinguish themselves differently from other parts here and there. I won't say this is like a complete replacement of the anime. It's actually like the same kind of story, but maybe fleshed out a bit more and there's more action going on. So I'd say treat this separately. So you don't need to actually read the manga or watch the anime to enjoy the game itself. You can enjoy the game on its own as a whole. And if you like something that's really nice and breezy, like a nice action game with nice cell shaded graphics and open world elements with Akira Toriyama-like designs, yeah, just go for it.
Mm. Is it fun to navigate the vehicles and the weapons?
Yeah. Definitely very easy to get around. Good controls and whatnot. So it's easy to just jump into. I think it can get repetitive in the later parts of the game, but that's how it is for open world games, where once you get a bit too powerful, sometimes you wonder what they're going to do next, except just finish a story.
Okay. From there, we move on to PlayStation 5's exclusive, Stellar Blade. What's the game like?
Yeah, so this is a sci-fi game where you play as Eve, a soldier who is tasked with liberating a ravaged Earth from aliens. So you gotta help out the humans who are stranded there, led by the, I guess, the captain of the group, Adam. So, you know, Adam and Eve, right? So the plot itself is really nothing special with a lot of, like, nonsense twists here and there that feels more like TV writing than actual storytelling for a game or medium. However, the battle system is really, really fun. Like, you're thinking like Souls-like kind of game, but with like a more combat options where you can teleport behind enemies, you can do fancy moves, you can cancel out moves, a la Bayonetta. So I believe the combat is trying to go more into the near automata kind of territory, but you gotta have that whole lock-on Dark Souls dual sort of mechanic going on. I believe one of the big game's biggest problems is like the replayability is a bit lacking, say, for the new game plus they added in. Like, it only has one manual save for people to work with, so you cannot basically create multiple saves to go back to areas you have visited, because sometimes it's really hard to go back to the places you visited. So it's not really a Metroidvania a la Dark Souls. It's like, once you're locked out of an area, you're locked out for good and you may have to start over again, that sort of situation. And also the platforming can be a bit awkward. But beyond that, the combat's really fun. Fighting monsters, beasts, and bosses can get, you know, really gratifying and really intense and also rewarding. So if you want to get into Stellar Blade for the PS5, jump for it for the combat, not so much the story. And of course, Eve has like, I think 30 unlockable outfits for your choosing, like depending on what quest you do and whatnot. So if you like to see your main character dress up in like a teddy bear outfit to other exotic clothes, be my guest, so you can unlock these kind of costumes.
Okay, is the combat worth it, you think?
Definitely. I mean, if you are into the whole Dark Souls, Elden Ring, Sekiro / Nier Automata combat, if you want a hybrid of that, I believe Stellar Blade could be your jam. This is the kind of game where people might either love it because of the combat or hate it because of the combat and also the story. I mean, if you can put up with like the generic stuff going on inside the story and enjoy the gameplay for what it is, especially with the assist mode for less skilled players, I think Stellar Blade could be your jam. I might want to buy this, but I already have quite a backlog, like because I haven't played Unicorn Overlord, so I kind of have quite a backlog.
Right, okay, so up next we have Children of the Sun.
Yeah, so in Children of the Sun, you play a lone female who swears vengeance on a cult that ruined her life. She does this by using a lone bullet from a sniper rifle she owns to kill off her targets in style. So it's basically one shot, multiple kills, or one kill in certain cases. She can also use telekinetic powers, like in the movie Wanted, to curve the bullet and also hit ricochet points for efficient killing and multi-kills. Children of the Sun has unconventional approaches to sniping, and it's really satisfying to actually pull off a shot. And according to my reviewer who reviewed it, she told me that it actually shows you like the pathway you took. So if you complete the game in one way, you get to see your trajectory and how your shots are done in the path of the bullet. And then you can want to try something different, you can do so. So the game actually excels in, you know, replayability. So if you want to play the stage over and again, you want to get a better score, yeah, you can do it as well. So I do believe Children of the Sun is an original and well-crafted indie game. Yeah, I mean, you can finish it in 4 hours, but if you want to replay it over and over for a better score, it can probably be like maybe 6, 7, 8 or so. It's intense, it's bite-sized, and it's got a lot of style. And I believe this sort of originality should be, you know, encouraged and be, you know, be shared to the world.
Yeah, looks different enough. And I think, yeah,
it's very gritty, definitely. Like, I think this game reminds me of Sniper Elite in a way, but this one's a bit more stylistic with this grittiness and its art style. It's really cool. I mean, something unique for the eyes and the music as well too. So as well as how the scene play out when you shoot the bullet in a successful round. So yeah, it's really good if you're really into the whole, like, you want to try a puzzle game but with a sniper rifle.
All right, sounds fantastic. Okay, moving on, we also have a Metroidvania called Tales of Kanzera. Zao?
Yeah, yep, is that how it's pronounced? That's correct.
Every story begins at the end of another. Each story carries with it the echoes of those that came before. My Baba, my father, your story was snatched away too soon. My name is Zao, a shaman of Kenzera. Here, I seek my father's return.
You play a character named Zao, who is a fictional hero of a story that a father wrote for his son just before the father's death. So Zao is basically getting through grief through the loss of a father. So he calls upon the god of death, Kalunga, and makes a deal. If he gets these spirits, the Kalunga will bring the father back to life. And they agree, and then Zao goes off to a Metroidvania adventure where he collects different shaman masks to, you know, open up different areas, you know, backtrack here and there like a Metroidvania. So I believe the gameplay is nothing really special. It's a solid standard, but I believe the narrative tone and the way it tells the story is what sets this one apart from other games. I mean, you got the music score, the vocals, the beautiful setting, and the overall feel and how the story plays out. That's the most unique thing about Tales of Kanzera.
Yeah, it looks kind of cool actually, and the color palette is also pretty nice.
Yep, that's correct. Gameplay, like I said, it's still alright, not the most unique, because if you played Metroidvanias like I guess Metroid Dread and other high tier stuff like Blasphemous 2 last year, you probably might feel like this is like kind of like average or so in terms of gameplay, but everything else around the story, all that, is what sets this one apart.
Okay, fantastic. Alright, last but not least, we also have Ayuden Chronicle 100 Heroes.
You've got ambitions, I understand that. But my situation's changed, and I have to leave through that gate.
It's over, Noah! accepted.
Yes, Aiden Chronicle 100 Heroes is a 90s JRPG capsule experience. That means fixed save points, a lot of dialogue, voice dialogue, a lot of story, 40 hours full of content and a story involving warring states, over 100 heroes to recruit to your cause, and challenging turn-based boss fights and enemies where you need to rely on the puzzle that's being given in front of you to solve it in a way. So I believe this is, for those who don't know, Eiyuden Chronicle is a spiritual successor to the 90s JRPG franchise Suikoden that is now currently held, owned by Konami, and the developers of Suikoden are actually doing this game. And that's why when you play this game, it feels very nostalgic. It's like a 90s capsule experience with the linear levels, the story elements, the characters from corny to cringeworthy to funny, and the really bright 2D/3D aesthetic. And you've got, again, like I said, you've got really meaty turn-based combat, and everything goes by really fast in a way. Enemies don't attack one by one, sometimes they attack together. You've got the rune system, which means you can customize your heroes really to the way you want. And again, you've got 100 heroes to pick from, so you've got like many different playstyles, from like you want heavy hitters or you want spellcasters at the back, or you can have a support character who actually adds buffs to your, whether you want to add more backpack space or, you know, cheer you on before the start of the fight. You've got many different playstyles to play around with, and also a bunch of mini games. You've got even a card mini game, a mini game that's basically like Beyblade, except they call it Begoma. And then you've got like a cooking mini game, and you've got like a creature egg racing mini game, and so many things here and there. Where especially when you establish and build up your castle, leveling it up and making it like the grandest thing ever. And I believe that's all I can say. I mean, I think the only issue with Aiden Chronicle is definitely the bugs. I remember there was a couple of bugs that couldn't make me recruit one extra character to have a complete set, so I may have to do a new game plus. But I believe the developer, Rabbit and Bear, are doing their best to fix and patch the game as we speak. So hopefully by the time this podcast is out, the game is fixed proper, and because I really recommend this as like this month's game of the month lah.
Okay, sounds like you're really happy with the game. Sounds like it has a bit of everything, right?
More like if you really want a turn-based JRPG experience, you should go for this. I mean, yes, there is a game called A Saga Emerald Beyond that's out from Square Enix, but I do feel that Aiden Chronicle 100 Heroes captures that zeitgeist of like the classic kind of turn-based battle and the exploration system, whether for good or ill. And if people do not like how the action RPG systems are for like games like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, you might want to come back to a game like Aiden Chronicle 100 Heroes because of its art style, its aesthetic, and also the way it plays.
And how's the story like?
Oh, it's really good. I mean, it is definitely nothing out of the ordinary, but the way it's handled with the music coming in, and the way, especially all the voice acting and the emotions and the storyline, it's got a few twists and turns, but nothing super expected and super surprising. But it's just, I guess what I like about it is earnestness. Like, it's just honest with what it's telling. Like, you just want to see it through from start to finish, as well as collect all the different characters to see what their stories are and how they act in the battlefield, or how they are like in the castle, and how they help work together with you.
Okay, sounds fantastic. So, last but not least, we're also going to spend a bit of time talking about the Fallout TV show that was released recently. Have you watched everything?
Yes, I've watched all 8 episodes.
Hello there. I'm here to show you a wonderful place. A veritable Camelot of the nuclear age. Not made by God Almighty, but the working man.
You can be a hero by purchasing a residence and a Vault-Tec vault today. Because if the worst should happen tomorrow, the world is going to need you to build a better day after.
So basically, it is actually 3 perspectives of characters in the Fallout universe, where you got, basically, it's like imagine it as like a sequel to the Fallout games. It's like a new story set in possibly the same universe, maybe different perspectives. So you've got like a Brotherhood of Steel perspective, and then you've got like the Bounty Hunter's perspective in the form of the ghoul. And then you've got like the Vault Dweller, Lucy, who has to get out of her vault to rescue her father. And then there are like many twists and turns, and then they cross paths, and then they find different vaults, and then they find out more about the surface world and how dangerous it is. And I guess what I like about it is true to the game's tone and vibes, with crazy levels of detail and the amazing production values. It's just really good storytelling, especially with the fact that it just needs 8 episodes to tell its 3 perspectives.
Alright. Yeah, so I mean, aesthetically, it does look like Fallout, right? I mean, and that's pretty surreal to see. But you feel like the TV show managed to capture the spirit of the game as well, right?
Oh, yes. Right down to the goriness of it all. Like, it's got the dark humor, it's got like the serious tones, it's all balanced really well. And then you've got the crazy stuff, like the ghouls and the atom bomb stuff and the weapons, and even like the fact that the vaults look pristine as they should, you know, and then how wacky it can get sometimes. So I like how they balance everything all for, you know, compelling television viewing with some like twists and turns going on. Like, you really want to see through from start to finish about why the main characters do what they're doing and how it's being pulled off. Like, I do like the fact that like early in the show, you actually see how Lucy uses the Stimpak. You know, like how when we play the games, the Stimpak itself is just like, oh, you just use it up and you're done. This one, you actually see how it's being stabbed into the body, you know, to heal you, and how certain medicines in the game work.
Yeah, that would be interesting for players of the game, right?
Yeah, nice attention to detail, basically. I think there are so many people in the production team who are just insane to actually go above and beyond to make it as authentic and as true to the games, but also delivering a compelling viewing experience, especially with all the cameos and nods, which I'm not going to spoil. I'd rather people go watch all 8 episodes, binge them if you have to. Like, just watch it. You'll see. Again, it's actually up there with shows like Arcane and I guess Cyberpunk Edgerunner, like in terms of great adaptations based off video games.
Okay, sounds yeah. I mean, you're tempting me right now, and so we've spoken about the fact that the show has also influenced the number of players currently playing Fallout. Do you think that this will be I guess a boost for the franchise as a whole?
Yes. As I mentioned in the previous news, I believe 4 or 5 million people have picked up Fallout as soon as the show is done and being watched as we speak. So good on for Bethesda, you know, to actually give more exposure to Fallout New Vegas, Fallout 4, the other Fallout games, I suppose, and Fallout 76.
Okay, fantastic. All right, so what can we look forward to next month?
All right, for May, I believe I am looking forward to an indie game called Animal Well, Little Kitty Big City, hopefully Homeworld 3, if that date is true. Other big game, Senua Saga, Hellblade 2, and World of Goo 2. I believe it's a sequel to World of Goo back in the day. So, a couple of indie games and one big one.
You're tuning to GG Well Played, and that was Jonathan Leo, content director at kakuchupore.com, wrapping up the biggest news and releases in April. For more gaming news and reviews, head over to their website, kakuchupore.com. If you'd like to listen to this episode again, look for the podcast on bfm.my, our app available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. You can also find our podcast on Spotify. Do share thoughts and the games that you play via our email, ggwp@bfm.my. Don't forget to also follow the station on X at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharuddin. Thanks for joining us. Game on, and please take care. This has been GG Well Played.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.